Jordan!
Bring him up, gang. Bring him up.
Here we go. History in the making.
Green, green, green.
It's cut down time again in the Cup Series, and since we're at a road course and Shane Van Gisberg is running, does that mean nobody's going to get a free pass? Hi, this is Brett McMillan. You're listening to the Pit Reporters. With me this week, Zach Sterniolo from NASCAR.com and Doug Turnbull from PRN and the Five to Go podcast.
Welcome to the Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network. And now, here's your host, Brett McMillan.
Hey, welcome to the show. Glad to have Zach and Doug here. And you guys are commiserating. You're both alumni of what, frontstretch.com?
That's right.
And yeah. Does that mean that one of you is going to try to put the other one on the wall before the show's over?
No, it means we both graduated and we could compare diplomas, all right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
That's
is that exactly what graduated right. To paying jobs.
Okay, we know what happened with teammates over the last weekend, and we'll be talking about that.
we'll keep it a little bit cleaner, I think.
Okay.
I think.
Okay, no Denny Hamlin involved in this one, but we'll talk about that. Well, let's talk about, I tell you, Kansas race was an outstanding event, and you can't beat that finish, Zach.
No, that was phenomenal. I feel like that's what we expect every time we go to Kansas now. These 1.5 mile tracks have always delivered, but this was our first true intermediate race since the 600 back in May. Gave us everything we could have possibly wanted. It was a fantastic finish. The winner was in doubt until the last corner, really the last 100 yards. And then you had some dramatic crashes in the mix of it. It felt like everything we could have possibly wanted from a NASCAR race, particularly this time of the year too. We talk about the playoffs and all the debate that's going on right now. None of that mattered on Sunday afternoon at Kansas. It was just a straight up great race that delivered every bit of action we could have asked for.
Well, Mr. Georgia, how did you feel about that?
Yeah, no kidding. Listen, Chase Elliott going to victory lane wasn't a total surprise in comparison to maybe sometimes. He's taken a lot of flack the last couple of years for not being a consistent winner or front runner. But let me tell you, the Hendrick cars are more dialed in at Kansas. There's a lot of talk at the beginning of these playoffs, especially after Darlington. I know, Zach and Brett, you remember that. How, whoa, where's Hendrick at? And we figured this would be a big coming out party for them. They were decent in New Hampshire, and Chase Elliott was the one that got the biggest bite of the apple. And really, his teammates did not. William Byron notably struggled. Alex Bowman, I'm not sure he was in the race Sunday. One lap led by Kyle Larson in the race, but Chase Elliott led some laps for a time. But going from 10th to first, I don't care how many new tires, if he had 8 new tires on that number 9, that's still a big feat. And it almost was luck because he had to choose the right lane, and as he put it himself, for the seas to part at the right time. So yeah, there was a siren going off at Dawsonville, though I can't quite hear that where I am in Atlanta.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Alan Gustafson made the gamble, the 4 tire change when other guys came in for 2. It did pay off, Zach, but you needed that late caution. And that all kind of, you know, people are going, oh, yeah, if you don't get the late caution, then. But that plays into your, when you make a gamble like that, that's part of the gamble that you're like, okay, we're not going to have just one restart. We're gambling that there's going to be more than one.
That's right. Or you're gambling on at least just maximizing whatever your position, whatever the maximum position you're going to get out of that race. If they took 2 tires, they were not going to really advance all that much more from where they were running anyway before those pit stops. They got a little lucky that Denny Hamlin fell back those 6 spots on pit road when their jackman missed the post. But at that point, you got to just put yourself in the best position to maximize and give yourself some sort of advantage. And that's exactly what Alan Gustafson did on Sunday afternoon. I know he gets some flack sometimes for making calls that just don't go the team's way, but he put Chase in the right position to succeed on Sunday. And then to Chase Elliott's credit, he makes that move right after the start finish line to put himself up near the wall and get outside of William Byron before they get to turn 1. That's really what sets him in position to rocket around the outside and get all of those spots and set up a solid last final lap and a half for him and be there when Denny and Bubba make contact going into turns 3 and 4. I thought Chase did a great job behind the wheel, and I don't think that should be overlooked either.
No, he really did. It was interesting on the restart. You heard both the inside and outside lanes complaining that they had teammates behind them, and they set it up that way, Doug, and yet neither teammate gave his teammate a bump, which was both of these guys were expecting.
Well, look, the bow tie took the trophy, right? But it was those Toyotas. I think there was 5 of them in the top 5 on that final restart or so. Right? Maybe you had Hamlin, Briscoe, Bell, Wallace, and even Reddick in the mix up there. And because all of them were so dialed in, and really Toyotas have been dialed in for just about every race in the playoffs, I think they were all thinking, hey, this is my ticket, not, oh, we could do this together. Because frankly, if you're a playoff driver, say Bubba Wallace finished, what, fifth in that deal? He gained 1 point on the cut line that entire race because he struggled early on. I don't think any of them were thinking, oh, this is a good points day. They were all going for broke, and that held them back to the win. And it, as we said earlier, opened the seas for Chase Elliott. But, yeah, it is interesting how the teamwork went completely out the window. And, Brett, how adjacent that was to the Denny Hamlin-Ty Gibbs skirmish from a week before that really made for an entertaining race on PRN.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about that coming up in a minute because that's been the topic of conversation this week and comparing Denny's reaction this week compared to Denny's reaction a week ago at New Hampshire. And we'll discuss whether or not there's any consistency in that message. How big is it for this sport to have the most popular driver guaranteed a spot in the final eight?
Well, I think it's enormous, and especially because he earned his spot there. This was, yes, he was, what, fifth at the white flag and first at the next time by. But I think that's a big deal to get Chase back into the round of eight in a position to compete for a championship on merit. This team has huge momentum. Yes, the Kansas win is a big deal and almost a surprise in some aspects, but Chase has been good at the at Kansas for a long time. Not to mention, he also gets an extra 5 playoff points from this that he gets to transfer into that round of eight, so that gives him a little bit more cushion going into that next round. And if only for one weekend, they solved their biggest problem, which was qualifying. They qualified fourth, gave themselves great pit stall selection, and from there they didn't have to play from behind for once. They were able to be up front all day. They were able to contend within that top five all day and really put themselves in position. So now they've got 3 top fives in their last 4 races. They've led laps in 4 of the last 5. And he's dangerous at these round of 8 tracks. Now, Las Vegas isn't one of those, but you look at Martinsville and you look at Talladega, he's got wins at both of them. This 9 team is dangerous, and I think getting him into the round of 8 might be a regret for these Toyotas that let him get there in the first place.
Well, we know what his history is at road courses, not necessarily in the Gen 7 car, but he still has some decent finishes at the road courses, Doug.
Well, he does for sure. And I'm looking at I think there have been 5 road course races this year, 4 top 5 finishes of those, 3rd most points in the Cup Series for Chase Elliott, who we don't talk about on road courses this much anymore after being so dominant. He also at the Roval has the most points since the Roval debuted in 2018 and is in the top 5 or so in the Gen 7 car, the Roval. So if Elliott had been at a bad point spot entering this race, I'd feel good about where he would be in the Roval, but there are no guarantees. I want to point out, too, the point that Zach was making about the playoff points. Chase Elliott entered these playoffs, I think, with just 13 playoff points. And even with this win, he still has 10 less playoff points than Christopher Bell. He has 18 less playoff points than Denny Hamlin. So I think Chase Elliott and Chase Briscoe, who each have 18 playoff points apiece, you know, assuming Chase Briscoe advances too, they're going to have their work cut out for them going for the round of 8 to the championship 4.
Absolutely. Well, when we come back, we'll talk about the hot topic. Denny Hamlin in the spotlight once again. What a surprise.
This is Kyle Petty for Echo Park Automotive, and I'm here to tell you why you should shop Echo Park before you buy a car, truck, or SUV. Over half of inventory at Echo Park is priced below $25,000, and car for car, truck for truck, Echo Park Automotive's pricing is $3,000 less than the competition. Maybe that's why Echo Park has over 95,000 five-star reviews. Echo Park Automotive is built to make sure you drive away happy. It's even in their name. Echo Park Automotive. Every car, happy owner. The official used car dealer of Speedway Motorsports.
When it comes to maintaining your engine to run at peak performance, trust Z-Max Micro Lubricant. Z-Max soaks into metal, so it's easy to add to your oil or gas to disperse carbon buildup in your engine, fuel system, and transmission. Protect your vehicle's engine to the max with Z-Max. Check us out at zmax.com or visit us on Facebook and Twitter to find out more about our full line of products. Remember the name, Z-Max, for your car, big rig, small engines, firearms, and more. That's Z-Max Micro Lubricant.
Mark Garrow is your host for Garage Pass, here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
Hi,
this is Doug Rice at PRN. Join me every Monday night for another great episode of Fast Talk.
I watched the race on TV, and they wanted to give him the mantle of greatest of all time, and he's won 4 races in a row, and so I can't do that yet. But I do think what we're watching is a guy who's changing the sport. He's changing the way the other drivers approach road racing. He's making them study. He's making them up their game.
That's Fast Talk right here on the Performance Racing Network.
Local radio brings people together like never before.
It's a beautiful hometown weekend out there. We've got
your local stations keep you informed and involved with music, talk shows, and real-time news updates you can trust. We are live and local. We are America's broadcasters, connecting you to what matters most. Text radio to 52886 and tell Congress to support your local radio stations.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Let's get back to more Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network.
Welcome back, along with Doug Turnbull from PRN and the 5 to Go podcast, and Zach Sterniolo from NASCAR.com. Brett McMillan, glad to have you with us. Are we surprised, Doug, that Denny Hamlin found himself in the eye of the storm one more time?
For some reason, I just root for, kind of like Jordan Bianchi talks about all the time on his show, chaos. And Denny Hamlin seems to thrive in that. And I almost laugh out loud when I see just every week, whether it's something he says on the podcast or an interview, whether it's something, of course, with the lawsuit. I mean, I know that's not a laughing matter. It's a serious thing. Or whether it's something on the track, like with Ty Gibbs last week or Bubba Wallace this week going for the win. Denny Hamlin stays right in the middle of it. And he's consistently pro Denny Hamlin, I guess, is kind of the word about it there. He doesn't talk to me anyway out of both sides of his mouth. Though a week ago, as you were alluding to earlier in the show, Brett, he was complaining about, doesn't Ty Gibbs know I'm racing for a championship? Whereas the car that he owns, Bubba Wallace, is racing for one, and Denny Hamlin was on kill going for the win. So yeah, it's almost uncanny. And I'm looking to see what happens here at the Roval, where he doesn't have to make a lot of big headlines or do anything being 48 points above the cut line, but I think he got into Tyler Reddick at the Roval last year. They made contact and almost took Reddick out of the championship then.
Well, he's 48 points above the cut line and in pretty good shape, Zach. The problem is that the car he owns, that Bubba Wallace drives, between turn 4 and the checkered flag went from a guaranteed spot in the final 8 if he wins to 26 points below the cut line by the time he crossed the finish line and finished 5th,
which is a margin that is almost impossible to make up at the Roval. You just got to go for the win if you're Bubba Wallace, and unfortunately he's not a guy who we expect to go contend for the win. Now, he has gotten a lot better at road courses, and I think he really can contend within the top 5, top 10, but he's not a guy we expect to go out there and contend with an SVG or an AJ Allmendinger or a Christopher Bell to fight for the win. And you just wonder what the atmosphere is within that 23-11 shop after such a deflating loss, because Bubba did everything right. The whole 23 team deserves a lot of credit from where they started that race. They started 7th, but immediately fell back almost outside the top 20. And then all of a sudden, as that race goes on, the 23 gets better and better and better, and Bubba is in a position to win this race at a track where he's won before. He did everything right, and then that's how it ends. It has to leave you sour. It's really unfortunate. But I also think it's a split second decision if you're Denny Hamlin and you got to go for it. I'm sure he feels the pressure of getting his 60th career win, but also the pressure of, I can't let anyone think I'm just going to roll over for this guy either. There is the dichotomy, right, of the New Hampshire incident with Ty Gibbs. It is different, right? Because they were fighting for 11th. These guys are fighting for the win.
Absolutely.
They were fighting for 11th in the middle of stage 2. It's a way different scenario, so I understand you got to go all out at that moment. It's unfortunate the way it played out, and you would have hoped, I think, if you're in that 23 car, that the 11 would have given you a little bit better of a chance just to get to the flag.
Well, what he did say, Doug, in his podcast this week is, he goes, look, Joe Gibbs pays me a lot of money to win races in the 11 car. And at that moment, he's thinking, I'm a driver, I'm not a car owner. He's not thinking about the 23 next to him, the car that he owns. He's thinking about, I got to do what I got to do to win this race. And, you know, to Zach's point, he's focused on that 60th win. He wants that 60th win.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe even more so than he wants that spot in the final eight, which he was in pretty decent shape to get anyway, as we can see, because he's 48 points to the good at this time, but even though he didn't win the race. But, and I, you know what? I'd rather see a guy go like that, go do whatever he needs to do to try to win the race. And
well, that's kind of what I was thinking, Brett, is to your point. There's outrage that he did this to the car he owns and to Bubba Wallace, who needed the win more than him, so to speak, based on the points, right? How much more outrage would there be if he had gotten in line and let the car he owns wins? Okay, that then he would be facing, oh, collusion. Oh, you didn't go for the win. It would be the exact same thing. So, I mean, if we're judging this off of fan outrage or maybe outrage in the 2311 shop, I can assure you there'd be outrage in the Joe Gibbs Racing shop if after a week after scrapping with his own teammate, if he put Joe Gibbs Racing at a disadvantage by letting a 2311 car go ahead of him, even though that car needed it more. So I'm with you, Brett. There was really, it's really as much in going for the win as they were doing. It was almost a no-win situation for him. And the only way it would have been better, of course, is if he had actually won, which I know there was a power steering issue that also played into how he was able to maneuver that car, as he talked about on his podcast too.
And to the point of putting another JGR car in jeopardy of not advancing, if Bubba wins that race, as they went across the stripe for the white flag, Chase Briscoe was only 7 points above if Bubba wins that race. That's a really scary predicament to put the 19 team in after all of that. Now, that shouldn't be a worry of the 23. It shouldn't be a worry of the 11. They got to go for their own victories and making sure that their respective teams are in. But that's essentially another reason why the 11 really needed to make sure that he was in the best position to succeed off turn four. But again, it's just unfortunate that they didn't even get to the checkered flag clean.
Well, a lot of people this week, Doug, have been talking about Toyota ought to be really ticked off. Toyota needs to have a meeting with these guys. Toyota was in position to win that race, to have four of the top five at least, and they ought to be furious at this point. But didn't we just have that situation at Martinsville last week, which NASCAR has addressed, where Chevy conspired to make sure a Toyota didn't make the final four?
Yes, and there was a blockade with that whole Ross Chastain and Austin Dillon deal that kept Brad Keselowski and whoever behind. And remember that Christopher Bell got taken out of the playoffs because Bubba Wallace supposedly, you know, slowed and let him by in the closing laps, and then Bell also rode the wall, or what, similar to the Chastain incident from a few years ago. So, as a manufacturer, I don't know that they need to have a meeting, but you got to say to yourself, "Golly, man, we had five bullets in the gun, and not one of them hit the target." They've got to be happy with the great finishes, but they would have been even happier if the lowest driver in points out of those, which would have been Reddick or Wallace, had squeaked by to win. And by the way, it wasn't just Hamlin racing Wallace hard. Wallace also ran Bell, Joe Gibbs Racing, high into the wall at the beginning of that. Chase Briscoe was getting run all over the place too, and he even said afterwards with resignation, I'm paraphrasing, I don't even know what to make of that restart. It was just a crapshoot. And so really, as I said earlier, with so much competitiveness just squeezed to the front of the field, it was almost like that since they all had such an equal shot, of course Chase Elliott won because they all thought they could win, right?
Exactly.
Cancel each other out.
It really is a great point. It really does feel like everything was kind of boiling up to that point. And to Doug's point, I thought it was a really good thing to note that Bubba raced Bell really hard on each of those final two restarts, on consecutive restarts, because even when Zane Smith went upside down, as Zane is riding the wall, Bubba's in the middle of kind of doing the same thing he did on the last restart, which is putting Bell really close to that outside retaining wall off turn four, side drafting the heck out of him. You got to do that. You got to put him in that position because you got to put anything you can do to slow down a guy like Bell, if you're Bubba Wallace, you need to do. So it was a each man for himself sort of situation, and unfortunately, none of them were left standing.
So if NASCAR goes back to the 1-36 championship scenario, what would we be talking about? We'll talk about that when we come back.
Attention investors. This is a simple commercial on the investment value of gold. Gold continues to make new highs. In good markets and in bad markets, you need to have your portfolio balanced with gold. Learn about owning physical gold or getting a gold-backed IRA. Make this simple call right now.
800-308-4648. 800-308-4648. That's 800-308-4648.
Sponsored by Reagan Gold. We're offering a 100% risk-free gold guide. Gold continues to make new highs. And unlike stocks, gold has never been worth zero. You owe it to your nest egg and future to own some physical gold or set up a gold-backed IRA. Call right now for your free report.
800-308-4648. 800-308-4648. That's 800-308-4648.
Sponsored by Reagan Gold.
Doug Rice is your host for Fast Talk every week on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
No one's paying me to say this, but you've been our lifeline. We have no internet. We have no TV. We barely have cell service. I don't know how I'm able to get to you. My Wi-Fi is not working. And I have a radio, and I finally got power on, and I have it plugged in, and I could hear you. You're the only station I can get in.
Wow.
Well, that's why we're here.
So. Wow.
The report that we got was that a severe tornado was heading right toward us. But I just want to commend you gentlemen for the job that you're doing, for keeping us informed.
I just wanted to say thank you for being on the radio and guiding us to, you know, where we can get help.
I just want to tell you, the first thing I heard was your voices the next morning. Oh, shoot. And it made me cry. The comfort of hearing your voices.
My respiration, perspiration, and aggravation are sky high, but you guys have been the guiding light.
Your local AM station makes a difference. We're back with more of the Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network.
Sweepstakes fans, start your entries. Visit echopark.com/speedway to enter for a chance to win a Toyota Tundra plus a brand new Thor camper. Visit echopark.com/speedway now and you can drive off a winner. And we welcome you back to the Pit Reporters along with Zach Sterniolo from NASCAR.com and Doug Turnbull from PRN and the Five to Go podcast. I'm Brett McMillan. Glad to have you with us. A lot of talk about what NASCAR is going to do with the playoff system. And, of course, they're not going to announce anything, Zach, until after the season is over. But we're hearing more and more talk that Mark Martin has just worn everybody down and that he wants to go back to this system where you look at the entire season points and you crown a champion based on the season points. And my question is, what will we be talking about from this past weekend's race at Kansas, if that's what we were doing? We wouldn't be talking about Hamlin putting Bubba in the wall and Bubba being, you know, now all of a sudden Bubba's, you know, 26 points below the cut line. We wouldn't be talking about if Bubba had won, then Logano would be in the situation. We wouldn't be talking about how many guys have a chance at the Roval. We'd be talking about, well, Kyle Larson and Hamlin or whoever. We'd be looking at these guys going, well, and would Denny Hamlin have taken a race off this year with the birth of his child? Because that counts against his season-long total. I think you go to this 1-36 system again, which, I'm sorry, I've been around this sport long enough to remember that and remember a guy clinching the championship with three races to go. I remember this. And yeah. I don't know. You'd be talking about two guys right now, and all the drama from last week's race. Chase Elliott, big win. That was it.
Yeah.
What else would we be talking about?
It is interesting because I really do see an extent to both sides, validity for where we are now, where we might be next year. Certainly, the 3-3-4 format has been floated, along with this 36 race. Points championship. So someone made the point that Ryan Blaney hitting the wall in practice on Friday or on Saturday, excuse me, really was inconsequential because he had won at New Hampshire and really didn't matter. And in a full season standpoint, that probably does add a little bit more significance because there isn't that guarantee to lean on. So I understand that perspective
but
as well.
Think about the season Ryan Blaney's had.
Right.
He would have been 10th in the standings anyway, or 8th in the standings. He'd be long out of this race anyway.
I think he'd probably be top five, but yeah, go ahead, Doug.
Well, in the non-playoff standings, and granted, people are going to race differently if it's a full season versus the playoffs.
Exactly.
In the non-playoff standings, he is second in points, minus 32 to William Byron. And Kyle Larson's third, minus 55. Christopher Bell, minus 62. At least the non-playoff standings listed on Racing Reference. Okay, it's
Does that count stage wins, the points for stages, and things like that, which all may change?
I think it's the non-playoff stage. So I'm not sure if that has all the bonus stuff stirred in or not. But nonetheless, Blaney is a top five driver in points without that, right? I mean, but think about it. We didn't care if Blaney finished 20-something in that race with the pit road speeding penalty and the crash at all because he had clinched to the next round. And I think that's why drivers like Martin Martin and others in the sport that are voting for 1 through 36 put it on a pedestal because it makes every race count the same. So there's the good of every race counting the same. The bad of it is that that people just aren't going to be as plugged in at Michigan in June as they are going to be at Martinsville in October when there are only two races left. And in either scenario, at least in Michigan, you could say, well, what if Austin Dillon wins or Richmond? What if Austin Dillon wins and gets in? So it's a really fascinating debate. I can't believe that this 1-36 movement has actually gained this much steam. And I almost wonder if it actually has or if it isn't being trumped up a little bit to get people a little bit more excited. So I don't know. I just, to me, there's something seems fishy about that, and I don't really think it's going to land there.
I do think that it has gained actual steam from the people within the committee, at least from those with platforms that we've heard from, right?
Sure.
That said, I really do think there is a middle ground to be found. I understand the one race championship really probably isn't the ultimate way to settle our championship. I don't think that delegitimizes the champions that we've had in this format dating back to 2014, because you've got guys like Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch, Martin Truex Jr., and Joey Logano. All of those guys and the others who have won championships in this format are legitimate champions. But I understand having a larger sample size to sort that out from. So if we go to a four-race finale, if that is what ultimately is landed on, I think that's fair, because especially if you look at the 2026 schedule that we know is out there for sure, you get four different track types involved in that. You get a short track, you get a super speedway, you get a mile flat track, you get a mile and a half intermediate track. All of that is factored into determining, okay, who is the best of our race drivers on any type of course we've got. So I am a fan of a bigger sample size, but I also don't think that everything is totally wrong with a playoff format either.
Let me ask you this, Doug. Would the August or September, whenever it happens, Daytona race, the last race of the regular season, would it be sold out if it weren't the last race of the regular season? Would Darlington be sold out the next week if it wasn't the first race of the next or the opening of the playoffs? Would whatever the second to last, I think New Hampshire is going to be the second to last regular season race. It was sold out this year because it was a playoff race. Is that going to be a sellout if it's not closing almost to close out the regular season?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to it, because I also know that people just love those races. So I think those are great points, Brett. I'm not arguing against what you're saying at all. I wonder if it's Daytona and it's summer and I think anything can happen, I want to buy a ticket. I know the playoffs add layers to it for some, but then the playoffs, it seemingly anyway, I know that the internet pitchforks are louder than, and I'm not talking badly about people that oppose it. You know what I mean? The internet opposition or pro for anything is louder than real life. But I don't know how much it swings the needle to make people not go to the race or go. I'm not sure. I will say though, that to Zach's point about having a more balanced playoff, I tend to agree. I'm always kind of a compromised person when it comes to these real fierce debates. However, the 2026 schedule being out, to me, actually, I think that NASCAR, because they are the ultimate authoritarians in this, right? NASCAR is making this decision, not a playoff committee. The committee is weighing in. NASCAR could also take a super speedway like Talladega out of those last four races if it wanted to and swap in the Roval so you have a road course as part of the four or something like that. So I think even though the schedule is, quote, final, I think everything is subject to change if you change the playoff format, in my opinion anyway.
Zach, will we be even having a discussion if Penske hadn't won the last three championships?
It's a great question, and I think there's a valid argument to be made that no, we wouldn't, but particularly after Joey Logano went from being ousted at the Roval until Alex Bowman was disqualified to winning Las Vegas and propelling himself into the championship four all over again. I still don't think you can take anything away from what the 22 team did. And in fact, I think that actually adds more credence to their championship value from last year because they overcame all of that adversity to do it and pulled off some pretty incredible strategy at Vegas to do so. But I do think there is a sense of people getting tired of one team being really well suited at one particular racetrack, and that's where that championship is settled. We were very fortunate at Homestead for all the years that we had this format there. I think it was six seasons. We had one race finale at Homestead, and we had a different driver win that every year, except for Kyle Busch going winning it a second time in 2019. In addition to his 2015 win, you had a different guy in contention every year, and it wasn't dominated by a particular race team. That hasn't quite been the case at Phoenix because 2020 and 2021, when we had the Gen 6 car, we had Hendrick Motorsports pull it off with Chase Elliott and Kyle Larson. And now since the next Gen car, Team Penske has nailed down Phoenix and similar tracks, and we've had Joey Logano and Ryan Blaney become our champions. I think
can you imagine at Phoenix if Denny Hamlin is a couple of laps away from his first championship and then Ty Gibbs pops a tire and hits a wall and brings out a caution and then Joey Logano passes Hamlin on the final restart to win? I think the entire internet would just shut down for a night.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely it would. Absolutely it would.
And it's in all the players.
Knowing how the season goes, that's probably how it's going to end.
But, exactly. Doug, your point earlier talking about how the standings would look, you also mentioned, and this is a valid point, guys would race completely differently if the format was different, and they will tell you that.
Yes.
You're racing according to the format. Do we need to win this race? Can we try some stuff now because we know we're in the playoffs? Yeah, we can do that. We don't need to worry about whether or not we're going to have to win this race. Guys would race differently, and they will tell you that if they knew the format. They'll race to the format, and they tell you
absolutely.
That.
Every time. Yeah, I think that's 100% true. And when people used to complain 15 years ago about Jimmy Johnson and, oh, he never would have beat Dale Earnhardt in the old format or something, I was like, yeah, but it's the 48 team and Chad Canales with the Wizard on top. They would certainly approach it differently and not save the biggest bullets for the last 10 races. So I think, Brett, you're absolutely right. Now, I do think that just looking at cumulative points, you see the most speed through the year. Looking, the top five cars of the, quote, classic points are Byron, Blaney, Larson, Bell, and Hamlin, all within 63 points of each other in the non-playoff standings anyway. So they're all fairly close and within almost one race of each other in points, but it would, as you said, look differently. So it'd be interesting to see. I almost wish – no, I don't wish this. I've heard the idea floated. What if there was like a special trophy for the person that got the old school points championship and then a playoff one, which of course that would just not be great, but it would be almost interesting to see how people would race differently if it was a full season in this more modern era versus 22 years ago.
Don't try to get the points for a match.
It was just a thought. The four race
championship. If we go 3-3-4, which I'm okay with, there's going to be enough math involved, Doug. don't start with 2 points formats existing simultaneously. My head will explode.
I will also say those same people who said that Jimmy wouldn't have won his championships under the same format that Dale did also forget that Jimmy and Chad almost won the championship in 2002 with that same format in Jimmy Johnson's rookie year.
Uh-huh.
So
Hey, louder for the people in the back.
Yeah, Zach. That's right. That's right.
And by the way, people that are cursing the win in your in format are praising the 10 race chase. And I'm old enough to remember when I was in college in my early 20s in the 10 race chase, when everybody was cursing that and saying they wish they had the old Winston Cup points. So as Doug Rice always says, Brett, what fan, race fans, and you say it too, they hate change and things staying the same. Am I right?
Exactly right. Two things. All right. When we come back, a veteran crew chief headed to the Xfinity Series, and he's got to have a couple of pretty good shoes to take care of next year. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Make your plans now to stay at the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa when NASCAR returns to Las Vegas. They have great race ticket and room packages for you to choose from. The South Point also features a wide variety of excellent dining options at 11 different restaurants. Or you can enjoy the 16-screen movie complex and visit the 64-lane bowling center. Visit southpointcasino.com and make your reservations today. Stay where the racers stay at the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa.
This is Kyle Petty for Echo Park Automotive. As you might imagine, I know a thing or two about cars. And I'm here to tell you about a whole new way to buy a car, truck, or SUV. Did you know that Echo Park Automotive has over 95,000 five-star reviews? On top of that, every car that Echo Park Automotive sells goes through a 190-point inspection to make sure that it looks and drives like new, so you leave happy. It's even in their name, Echo Park Automotive. Every car, happy owner. The official used car dealer of Speedway Motorsports.
Catch Kyle Petty's Back Then Again Country Countdown with Charlie and Debbie here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
These cars are about to fire it off in anger.
Logano back across the stripe. Now Zane Smith putting on some pressure.
Side by side, Austin Cindric has him at the line, and he will take the lead into one.
Boy, what a save. We got cars sideways. It's Christopher Bell. He spins and collects a couple cars. Here comes Shane Van Gisbergen on the bottom. He's looking for second.
Now Chris Buescher fired out of a cannon at turn two. He's right into the rear bumper of Ty Gibbs. Which way is he going to go?
Oh, it's a multi-car accident. I want to say 15, 20 cars. Looks like Austin Cindric is involved. Denny Hamlin. Guys, that took out about two-thirds of the field.
We have a fight on pit road between two crew guys. One of them is with Ty Gibbs. One is with Brad Keselowski.
Brad Keselowski will see the white flag as he drives under the start-finish line.
Chase Elliott has battled at the front all night long. He's won the war. Chase Elliott has just punched his ticket to the playoffs.
Awesome job, man. Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
This is PRN. Brett McMillan returns with more of the Pit Reporters here on the Performance Racing Network.
Hey, welcome back. Doug Turnbull's here. Zach Sterniolo is here. We've got Rodney Childers has found himself a new job, and he's going to be in the Xfinity Series next year working on that one car for Junior Motorsports. He's going to have two different drivers, Doug. Kid named Zilish. You might have heard of him. He seemed to do okay this year in a full-time ride. He's going to be part-time in the Xfinity Series next year, and then Carson Quapel is going to go from full-time to part-time in the one car. So a little veteran leadership for a couple of young guys. What do you think about that?
I think that's an incredible combination there. And it says another thing, too, that 88 team, however it will be numbered or branded for 2026, that Connor Zilish is currently on a 16-consecutive top-five finish streak in. That team is up for something big. If they're keeping that together and Zilich is only going to be part-time, it also says it's kind of a shame for Carson Quapel that he has to go from full-time back to part-time there, because he's shown a lot of skill, but he's run nowhere near what Zilich has done and some of the other JRM cars have done. But how about Rodney Childers also getting into a series that I've heard a lot of people say probably suits him more, because the crew chief has a little more influence, a little more of a bigger box to work within, if you will, on that race car versus the Gen 7. But I also wonder, too, guys, with Rodney Childers properly entering the Hendrick pipeline, here I go, I'm already lighting a fire. Does that put some pressure on maybe one of the Cup Series crew chiefs here, particularly the 48 team, which hasn't run like the other three, if Childers has a lot of success in the Xfinity Series and there need to make changes at Cup? I don't know.
It's a valid question, honestly, because Rodney, we know, is a great leader, and he has succeeded everywhere he's been, unfortunately, except for Spire Motorsports this year when he started the year with Justin Haley. You look at his career, he started at Evernham Motorsports, and Scott Riggs was pretty quick week in, week out, and we kind of forget that Valvoline number 10 was actually pretty quick on a regular basis. Then he went to MWR, where Rodney has won with part-time drivers in the Cup Series. He led Brian Vickers to victory lane in New Hampshire when he was sharing the seat with Mark Martin at that time. So there is a playbook here for Rodney Childers to do well with two different drivers at the same time. It will be interesting to see how competitive that one car is next year. We know right now Junior Motorsports is the dominant team, even though they've gone on a short two-race winless streak in this Xfinity series. It feels like they've been...
Gasp!
Right.
Yeah, that, no, change it up.
Zilich is human.
And he's on the hot seat.
And so you go into next year, you get a guy like Rodney involved. Feels like you're only going to get better from here.
I find it interesting. You know, we thought, you know, I'm sure the rest of the competitors in the Xfinity series are going, let's see, we got four races left before Zilich is out of here. Finally. Good. Get him out of here. Now that I find he's going to run part-time next year, I guess it's just to get him more seat time, Doug. You know, because he's going to be full-time Cup Series. We know that for Trackhouse.
Well, and I don't have the rules in front of me, but rookie drivers in Cup get more Xfinity races than other full-time Cup drivers, right? I think it's full-time Cup drivers get 7, and I feel like rookies maybe get somewhere around 10. They get a few more, so why not put him there? And he's got all the sponsorship attached to him, and seat time makes a difference. Here's how much seat time makes a difference, and I don't have it in front of me, but Connor Zilich had, I think it was one top five finish before he broke his back in the Talladega race, and that was his win at COTA that was on PRN. He comes back and has finished in the top five in like every race since then and has got his 8 other wins. There's something about those first few races, he had a rough average finish at Xfinity, then he got seat time at BAM, and I think in this case, they're going to plan those very strategically to pair with the Cup races too. We don't know which races they'll do, but I think any seat time helps. And I've heard Joey Logano talking about this on the radio broadcast at Kansas this week. He would love more seat time in the Xfinity Series just because he loves to race. Kyle Busch, that feels like his secret weapon taken away from him, that he has so few other extracurricular races to run. And that is in line with his performance dipping in the Cup Series and other factors in that too. So I do think that Zilich is probably going to be a candidate to run extra Xfinity races even after his rookie Cup season, in my opinion.
Well, and speaking of Kyle Busch, we know that his crew chief from the Cup Series, Randall Burnett's going to be leaving, and he will be the crew chief for Connor Zilich in the Cup Series next year, which is an interesting pairing. And I tell you, Randall Burnett's got to be just frothing at the mouth to get going on this.
Absolutely. Randall talked with Zach Albert from NASCAR.com over the weekend at Kansas and basically said something's got to change on this 8 car. We've seen it. It's been pretty miserable. Whether that's a car setup thing, whether that's a Kyle Busch can't get the feel of the next gen thing, it's been really unfortunate to see Kyle Busch slide the way that he has, because I think a successful Kyle Busch, especially at this time, is good for NASCAR, and we're just not seeing that right now. That said, Randall Burnett being on the box for Connor Zilich is a great fit. That is, we saw what Randall was able to do with Tyler Reddick, both at RCR and in the Xfinity Series and then into the Cup Series. They won a championship together at the Xfinity level, and they won 3 races together at the Cup level. I think Connor Zilich can really excel at the Cup level right away with a guy like Randall calling the shots and setting up those cars.
Doug, your thoughts?
I was surprised to see it. Just not because they didn't need a change somewhere on the 8 car, but it just came out of nowhere. You didn't hear any rumors about anything, although I feel like silly season rumors just are totally different now than they used to be, or where it seems to be there was stuff speculated all the time before. But Randall Burnett has a track record with Tyler Reddick and came out of the box hot with Kyle Busch. When you have 2 seasons like these ones, especially this year, something's got to change, and it's probably not going to be the future Hall of Fame driver. Unfortunately, even though Randall Burnett's highly regarded, I don't think, though, this was an RCR decision first and then Trackhouse picked him up out of the scrap heap. I'm sure Trackhouse looked, who's available? Is it internal, external? This guy. And I'm sure there was a Brinks truck full of money comparatively that was involved too. And they went and recruited the best talent to put, because look, Shane Van Gisbergen moved over to Stephen Doran. It was, I think, a rookie crew chief with Spire Motorsports and rookie driver Zane Smith a year ago. And it's taken time for Doran and SVG to get their legs under them in the 88 car. They just got their first oval top 10 finish in Kansas. I know they have all the wins of the road courses. I think they wanted Connor Zilich, maybe looking at what happened there, to be a little bit better set up for success instead of going internal and not having a rookie and a rookie together, pit box and driver.
You know, they had the pep talk with Randall Burnett before the first race and just said, don't screw him up.
That's exactly right. Well, I'll also say this too, though. There's also the fact that if you look back since this next-gen car has been developed, I don't know that we've really seen anyone come up from the Xfinity series and make that adjustment from that car to this car and do it well. We see Cole Custer and Riley Herbst both struggling respectively at Haas factory team and 2311 this year in the Cup Series. Austin Cindric went out and won the Daytona 500 his rookie year in 2022, but hasn't had the same sort of consistent success.
Ty Gibbs,
the same thing. And
Noah
so,
Gregson.
Right, absolutely.
Had like 8 or 9 wins, yeah.
Absolutely. So I really wonder what that success rate from the Xfinity Series to the Cup Series is going to be with a guy like Zilich, who we've seen nothing but success from at this level throughout this first rookie season.
When we come back, when we come back, will anybody be able to move into the top 8 at the Roval? Stay with us.
I have a friend, about 50, had a bad accident and couldn't go back to work. If you're between the ages of 49 and 63 and can't go back to your job because of a physical or mental disability, Social Security could pay you as much as $3,800 a month. If you or a family member is unable to work because of a disability, call the Social Security Disability Helpline. Our team will give you a free case review and explain to you how much money you're entitled to, and you won't pay anything unless we get you benefits. See if you or a family member is entitled to close to $45,000 a year in Social Security disability funds. Remember, this is not something for people over the age of 65. If you're under 65 and can't work, call now.
800-731-1582. 800-731-1582. That's 800-731-1582.
Lenny Baticki brings you PRN at the Track every week here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
My fiancé is a veteran.
I did tours in Korea, Germany, and Bosnia before I got injured.
When Yusuf got out of the military, he needed help getting his disability benefits.
Luckily, DAV came to the rescue. They fought for me the same way that I fought for my country.
Every year, DAV provides life-changing support to more than 1 million veterans.
My victory is never giving up and finding more ways to serve.
He's pretty amazing.
Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Hi, this is Doug Rice at PRN. Join me for another great episode of Fast Talk.
We have NASCAR Hall of Famer Kurt Busch. What does a much older, wiser Kurt Busch want to tell Carson Hocevar?
Well, let's bust out all the VHS tapes and you can watch all my mistakes. Try not to do those, Carson. I like what he's doing. He's learning and he's putting his time in up front.
That's Fast Talk right here on PRN.
Let's get back to more Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network.
And welcome back. Zach Sterniolo from NASCAR.com is here, and Doug Turnbull from PRN and the 5 to Go podcast is here. We got two of the series going to wrap up their round of 12 this week at the Roval. The Xfinity series, pretty interesting. That's very interesting, Zach. You got Nick Sanchez, 5 below the cut line. Austin Hill, 7 below the cut line. Harrison Burton, 8 below. Sammy Smith, 14 below. A lot of opportunity there for some guys to make some moves.
A lot, especially when you consider that Sanchez is driving the same 48 car that darn near won this race last year. I don't know that he's in the same boat in terms of road course prowess that Parker Kligerman is, and might not be in the same position to win the race. But that is a really volatile cut line to be around right now. And really, unless you're Sam Mayer, who's plus 43, I don't feel safe if I'm any of them. Because Taylor Gray is plus 16, that could go away or in two stages.
Yeah.
It's anything can happen at this point. Austin Hill is a far better road course racer than he gets credit for being, although I don't think the Roval is a really great track for him. Harrison Burton has plenty of experience here. I don't really expect him to be in contention, but he's only 8 points out. Again, if you flip the stages, suddenly you're in contention anyway. So a lot can happen Saturday, and that's a 5 o'clock race too. We're going to get some night racing at the Roval. It's going to be pretty exciting from start to finish.
Yeah, thanks, TV.
Hey, I saw the lights on a picture from the infield there. It's going to be pretty cool to see it lit up. I mean, of course, we'd love to have it be more in the afternoon to get out of the evening, but it'll be reminiscent of the 2020 race that ended under the lights and also a monsoon. So it'll just be dry. That's the difference there. Hey, but Zach made great points, and I'm really excited to hear that, be a part of the call and listen to what the rest of the call is on PRN, because frankly, any of the drivers below the cut line could point themselves up. It's not like the Cup Series where we're basically saying they're all in must-win territory, and I know we're getting to that, but I love what he said about Nick Sanchez, too, in the 48 car, almost won by Parker Kligerman that race a year ago. Sanchez also, I remember correctly, was in the mix at Portland and got into it with the driver there, but was up in the top five. So if he could do it there, why not at the Roval?
All right, Cup Series on Sunday. Ross Chastain, 7 below the cut line. Bubba's minus 26, Tyler Reddick's minus 29, Austin Cindric's minus 48. He's pretty much in a win or else situation. Logano's plus 7, Briscoe's plus 21, Byron's plus 40. He seems pretty safe. But then you got Shane Van Gisbergen's in the race. He's out of the playoffs, obviously. But there goes your free pass into the...
Well, that's exactly it.
The guy getting the free pass into the round of eight. It's all going to be on points, right, Zach?
If you flip the stages, you're chasing the win, right? Well, that's great. But if you don't win, then it's all for naught anyway. So unless the 88 is involved in some sort of early incident and makes a mistake, which is extremely rare, good luck. it really does feel like it's going to be the field versus SVG this weekend. Now, there are guys that I look at, like a Kyle Larson, like a William Byron, like a Christopher Bell, that could, and an AJ Allmendinger, who could contend for this win outside of SVG. But until you beat SVG, SVG is 4-0 in his last four road course races. That's a pretty great record. It's a tough challenge, and especially if, you know, I really do think if you look at the cut line, Ross Chastain's probably the only guy who has a real shot of pointing his way in. He's 13 points outside with Logano ahead of him. Again, if you chase those stage points, you can put yourself in a pretty decent spot by the end of stage two to give yourself a fighting chance. Outside of that, with Wallace 26 out and Reddick 29 out, I'm not feeling great if I'm either of them.
What's so entertaining about the Roval is that, and about this point system, I'm not talking just about the playoffs, but the point system is each position is 1 point. All right. That you're not worrying about a bonus. I know there's the fastest lap bonus point, but besides that, each position is a point. So if you're 7 points to the or 13 points to the good, Joey Logano, and you miss turn one on a restart and you lose 12 spots, well, there you go, right? You know that he's 1 point to the good until the next thing happens, especially in stage three when there are no more stage points to be had. And we saw Joey Logano in this race a year ago at a track that he's actually very good at, 6 top tens in 7 races. Logano kept bleeding spots on the track. He just didn't have it under him there and just barely missed before the Alex Bowman disqualification advancing to the round of 8. We saw it happen right in front of our eyes. On the flip side, I mentioned earlier, Tyler Reddick got crashed right in front of me in turn 7 there, that new sharp turn. And he had to claw all the way back and just barely made it into the round of 8-2. We've seen Kyle Larson crash early in this race with a very comfortable points barrier or cushion just a few years ago. And he was just going a little too aggressive and hung it on the wall in the infield there. And that was the end of his chance for a championship. So even these drivers that are comfortable, because it's a road course, there are so many more places to make a mistake. There are a lot of places to make up for mistakes too. And that's why I love the back and forth there, especially if the field gets bunched up at a late restart.
Well, each week on the Pit Reporters, we give you a chance to go to goprn.com and vote in our poll. And this week's question is, who has the best chance of moving into the top 8? And we're giving you the 4 guys below the cut line: Chastain, Wallace, Reddick, or Cindric. Last week we asked you, how do you see the Gibbs-Hamlin spat? And this is interesting. It was actually pretty balanced. 31% said it was too early to get into it, meaning it was too early in the race to get into the little spat. 27% says we don't want team orders. 23% said championship contenders get priority. And 19% said Gibbs has a right to race for the win. So there you go. It's a pretty balanced.
Pretty good.
Yeah, but not the right to race for 14th, though.
Okay? Yeah, well.
But, hey, well,
don't let the details
get away. Vote? Well, we know where Doug voted. When we come back, white flag laps.
This is Kyle Petty for Echo Park Automotive. As you might imagine, I know a thing or two about cars. And I'm here to tell you about a whole new way to buy a car, truck, or SUV. Did you know that Echo Park Automotive has over 95,000 five-star reviews? On top of that, every car that Echo Park Automotive sells goes through a 190-point inspection to make sure that it looks and drives like new, so you leave happy. It's even in their name, Echo Park Automotive. Every car, happy owner. The official used car dealer of Speedway Motorsports.
We work hard to keep our cars looking great on the outside, but engine components need our attention too. That's where you can trust Z-Max Micro Lubricant to disperse carbon buildup in your engine and fuel system to keep your car or truck running at its peak. By soaking into the metal of your engine, Z-Max Micro Lubricant improves performance, extends engine life, and reduces emissions. Trust the many customers who've said, "Thanks for saving my engine." Find out more at zmax.com or follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
Mark Garrow is your host for Garage Pass here on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.
It's hard to believe in this day and age in the United States of America that children are hungry.
Our time on this planet is short. We have to give back to those in need.
Every child has a chance, no matter what obstacles they may encounter.
Never have we been taxed more as a society to help kids the way we are right now.
At Speedway Children's Charities,
our mission is simple.
Help every child we can.
Because all children
deserve joy
and hope
and love.
I'm PRN's Doug Turnbull, co-host of the 5 to Go podcast, a weekly deep dive into five motorsports issues. Devin Kupka gives the Gen Z view.
One thing that I've never seen before, when the cars got four wide, everybody stood up cheering.
And championship-winning mechanic Dan Elliott leans on his decades in the garage and promoting.
Unless everybody is aware of the rules, then no, it's not fair for everyone.
Listen to the 5 to Go podcast on GoPRN.com and subscribe on Apple and Spotify.
We're back with more of the Pit Reporters on the Performance Racing Network.
Hey, welcome back. Time now for our white flag laps. And first up from PRN and the 5 to Go podcast, Doug Turnbull.
I would not be on Performance Racing Network if not for two people. One of them retired last year, Doug Rice, the Rice man from the booth. And of course, we still get to hear him on Fast Talk on PRN and many other racing things each week. And the other is the guru, the doctor of love, as my late mentor, Captain Herb Ibbery, called him on the racing show we had here in Atlanta for many years, and that's Mark Garrow. Garrow was a weekly fixture on that show, and that's how I got to meet him and eventually Doug Rice, so they get a shot here with the red shirt of PRN. As many listening know, the news came public during a home race of sorts for Mark Garrow that he was not going to be in the booth next season for PRN, stepping away after many seasons there behind the mic. And this Charlotte race here, the Roval, will be the last race that I get to do with him when I'm up at the turn. So he is a hard worker. He's a lot of fun to be around and certainly knows his stuff. And I'm going to miss the guru, Mark Garrow, who rightfully is getting to step away there and get a little more rest on Sundays.
All right. Well said. Yeah, this week and at Vegas. And Vegas will be the last time in the booth for the guru. Next up from NASCAR.com, Zach Sterniolo.
We're doing it all over again, folks. We are forgetting that Christopher Bell is a threat anywhere we go, and particularly this weekend at the Roval. Bell has been electric at road courses all season long. He's been a threat at the road courses for a lot longer than that, too, though. He was runner-up in this race 1 year ago when Kyle Larson won the race. And by the way, that's the only race that we've had on this configuration. He's also the only other guy to win a road course race this year not named SVG. That's right, because he won the COTA race back in March. The number 20 Joe Gibbs Racing team has finished in the top five in five of the six road course races we've had. And after five playoff races, Bell's 9.2 average finish during the playoffs is second only to Chase Briscoe. Just 3 weeks ago, Bell won the round of 16 finale at Bristol. I think he's getting ready to do it again this weekend to close the round of 12.
He always seems to shine this time of year, doesn't he?
Sure does.
Well, oh, yeah. Where would we be without Denny Hamlin? It would be a much more boring sport. Love him or hate him, Denny Hamlin knows how to stoke the fire, and he's doing it right now. He did it at New Hampshire. He did it at Kansas. Love him or hate him, Denny Hamlin is a guy that keeps people engaged. We'll talk to you next week.
Join us again next week for the Pit Reporters on PRN, the Performance Racing Network.